I have been one acquainted with the night. I have walked out in rain and back in rain. I have outwalked the furthest city light. I have looked down the saddest city lane. I have passed by the watchman at his post and dropped my eyes, unwilling to explain. I have been one acquainted with the night, wrote the poet. From this assembly, this collection, this menagerie of texts, Exodus, Psalm, the Epistle to the Romans, and Matthew, we will select just one verse for those walking out, walking in the dark, walking at night, walking in the rain. A light, a flashlight, a candle, a guide. Romans 14:8. Let everyone be convinced in their own mind. Let everyone be convinced in his own mind. Let everyone be convinced in her own mind. Let everyone be convinced in their own mind. That is a step in faith, maybe not the first step, but a step along the sawdust trail of faith includes fairly quickly a connection with an embrace of conscience, of conscience. You owe it to yourself to be honest with yourself. You owe it to yourself to be able to stand in the mirror in that moment of conscience. Faith is the capacity to start again. Faith is the capacity to start over. Faith is the capacity to get up and move ahead. Faith is the strength to take the promise of Sunday morning and let it help us be guided by grace and mercy all the week long. Faith is the power to withstand what you cannot understand. Faith is that capacity that the reason can never fully grasp and that the law can never fully measure, to withstand what you can't understand. And the path of faith, fairly quickly, brings us up alongside conscience. Let your conscience, said your mother, be your guide, said your grandmother. Let your conscience be your guide. And the route to conscience carries us through several forms. They're all scriptural and they're all experiential, both. One of them is study itself. Now, you and I, we're all learners in a university, some older, some younger. We're all learning together. And study is what we engage in, students and teachers, all through the week. But it's also what places us here on Sunday morning. If you come to worship at Marsh Chapel for 3 years straight, you will hear the whole of Scripture, more or less. That gives you 1 year to pick up what you might have missed. You will hear the Hebrew Scripture. You will hear the Psalm, hear the Epistle, and you will hear the Gospel. And not every verse in Leviticus, but you will have a sense of the study of Scripture all and all and all along the way. St. Matthew here, as he has done earlier, speaking of study, is taking what he read in Mark. Mark wrote in the year 70 A.D., Matthew in 85. And leaving aside all the detail, what through this year we hope we have conveyed is that new occasions teach new duties. Time makes ancient good uncouth. One must upward still and onward. Who would keep abreast of truth? Meaning that what Mark wrote in 70 is amended, is edited, redacted by Matthew in 85, including in our passage last week, in our passage this week, that Matthew's facing a different situation and has the freedom by grace and spirit to face it anew, as do we. It's not a matter of recitation, it's a matter of study and of guidance. And when that comes to fruition, you feel it. You know it. You know it, as Kant said, of what brings wonder and awe, the starry heavens above, and the moral law within, that sense of that abiding sense of conscience rooted in the study of Scripture and the study of all things near and far, scriptural and other. Every month we pause for a faculty meeting next door, and the meeting begins each time with a devotion. This last month it was offered by a veteran professor, dear friend of now many years, who stood and read from the Scripture, the Gospel of John, and one word, Greek word meno, meaning abide, remain, continue. And after she was finished and offered her prayer, it gave a stirring to the conscience. That is, it restored one's faith in devotions. It restored one's faith in the power of a devotion. You come to along the trail of study. A step in faith includes the stirring, the quickening of the conscience in study. Likewise, such a step in faith, and we're here to grow in our capacity week by week in faith, includes a regard for, an appreciation of institutions, particularly in our time, both secular and religious, the necessity of strength, health, good leadership, and a future prospect for the institutions that make up a civil society. Volunteerism in a free society is not a luxury, it is a necessity. Volunteerism in a free society is not a luxury, it is a necessity. It guides us along the way. We have struggled in our time and will continue to struggle over the last 6-7 years to find the vocabulary, the grammar, syntax, and spelling in which together across the land to build healthy futures, institutions that matter and last and count and can be counted upon. This week, happily, one of our number remembered 2008, just a day or three ago, when Marsh Chapel hired a part-time gay woman, a part-time chaplain, first time this form of ministry had been so enacted, to work exclusively with the gay community at Boston University. It was a movement in the institution, and look at all that has come across the university since that day. A beloved pastor whose sermons guide us, we listen from afar, reminded us of institutions this week in the person of Jacob down at the river Jabbok, waiting as his ladder was cast up and as his dream shaped him. Our dreams are what open the future for us, including and in some ways especially in the care and feeding of institutional life. There is this step in faith that includes a growth in conscience, that includes for you and me a sense of our own responsibility to the need of institutions. There is in this step of faith as well a capacity to appreciate community together. We learn with and from each other in community. Wasn't it remarkable last Sunday that many of us after lunch were still sitting at the table at 2:15 in community, enjoying one another and enjoying the capacity to be at a common table, to be carried along by the commonality of the moment. You know, our chaplains worked very hard through the first part of the year, and we're coming toward maybe two-thirds of the way through to offer invitations of various forms to students, graduate and undergraduate students, one of which is something called the greening of the dorms, and that's simply two tables set up out front with plants that students can come and take and place them in their dorm room window. Well, on Wednesday, that was set to start at noon, and in the midweek service, the preacher didn't know that, but he was giving some suggestions to the students in front of him, and he said, among other things, "Yes, I understand you need to gain a great deal of knowledge in history and theology and substance and practice, but don't," he said, "forget the tactile. Don't forget art. Don't forget music. don't forget photography. And don't forget, he said at the end, plants. And as the benediction was given, the front doors opened, and there were two tables full of plants about which he knew nothing. It was an herbal altar call, as wonderful as it was unexpected. We have a capacity, and sometimes the Spirit moves us in happy ways, to live together, to watch over one another in community, to watch over one another in love. There is also, along with our conscience touching us in study and in institutional life and in communal life, there is perhaps most especially the way the conscience grows in conversation. You know, John Wesley named conversation as a means of grace, along with prayer, along with sacrament, along with discipline, and along with scripture. He had that high a view of the chance to grow in conscience in conversation. And that's an encouragement to us to make sure we spend prize our time in that regard. In COVID, we lost across the different subsections of this community about 36 souls, women and men, many of whom we didn't have a chance fully to memorialize. Our first death in March of 2020 was C. Faith Richardson, a regular conversational participant in this community. And she, her husband Neil, had taught Hebrew Bible at Syracuse University and then here at Boston University. But she had a career of her own. Some of you will remember her. She was the executive assistant to various embodiments of bishops here in New England, and she had 3 decades of experience, and she had a bright wit and a tart tongue. And it was rumored that the bishop would make a decision about who was going to Church X, even announce it, and then come back and have lunch with Faith and return and say, well, actually, I've changed my mind. I think Faith had something to say. She engaged in conversation. Sometimes life will surprise us in delightful ways. You know, some years ago, I went to breakfast meetings. Breakfast meetings are always 7 o'clock, eggs and bacon. This was with the fellow who ran the firm that guided our endowments in that church. I'd never met him. I was new. We had a chance to get acquainted across a meal. He wore his dark blue suit and his red tie, and I wore my dark blue suit and my red tie. And we sat and talked to each other. And somewhere toward the second part of the breakfast, I noticed that this fellow, who I didn't know, and he didn't know me, and we didn't really have a camaraderie yet, his lapel button, his shirt button, was unbuttoned. And I thought, should I say something to him? I don't want to offend him. We have to, and well, the breakfast ended, and my conscience was pricked, but I didn't have the grace to say anything. But you know, life is funny. Went to the office. It's a beautiful Richardson Romanesque building in that setting, and went toward the office, and there was a full-length mirror in the hallway there. And I stood there and saw this rascal before you in a dark suit and a red tie. And guess what? My lapel button was undone. We had sat there for a full hour, missing the chance in conversation to guide and to help one another. The conscience is a crucial stop in the development of faith along the sawdust trail of faith in life. It's a chance to look ourselves in the mirror, to be honest with ourselves. You owe it to yourself to be honest with yourself. Take to heart the gospel for this Lord's Day, Romans 14, chapter 8. Let each one be convinced in his own mind, her own mind, their own mind. For I am one acquainted with the night. I've walked out in rain and back in rain. I've outwalked the farthest city light. I've looked down the saddest city lane. I've passed by the watchman on his beat and dropped my eyes, unwilling to explain. Let each of us in conscience be convinced in our own mind.